Chapter 32. The light on the BAG turns amber, then green. Slowly lifting the tarp, we tentatively take our first steps out into the main dome. We can breathe freely. And then the smell assaults me, punches me in the gut, and I fall to my knees, gagging, trying desperately to retain the contents of my stomach. It's the exact smell I remember, that exact mixture of methane and sulfur. It floods my brain with a memory so real it seems to be happening all over again. Our trip to the pit. Rock, Scissors, and I had grabbed our little bags with egg salad sandwiches and skipped school, and spent the day hiking all the way there. It was the first time we'd ever done something like that, sneaking away without permission. What a thrill. We were smart enough, even at 9 or 10, to bring refurbished gas masks. You'd think it would look odd to anyone along the way watching little triplet girls skipping down the street with gas masks on. But Phil City, I know now by comparison with the real world, was filled with odd sights like this, so we were hardly noticed. When we got there, to the pit, I felt a strange mixture of awe and disappointment. It was certainly gargantuan, a mammoth circular hole in the ground, the largest rotating arm I've ever seen, rotating slowly, ever so slowly, mixing and fermenting the mysterious contents that would become furtifood. But I don't know. I guess I had expected more, like barely contained wildfires, or that the sludge might sprout tentacles trying to escape with a life of its own, or that black clouds complete with lightning and thunder would permanently hover over the spot, cursing it forever, like something out of Dante's Inferno. We sat between two trucks, watching the mesmerizing rotation of the arm, all of us suddenly realizing how starving we were. But there was a problem we hadn't worked out ahead of time. How do you eat lunch with a gas mask on? After much debate, we decided it would be possible to quickly unlatch our masks and, while holding our breath, munch a few bites of egg salad, then slip the mask back on and repeat. And it worked. At first. But we quickly learned that holding your breath and eating were mutually exclusive. You can't really do both, not entirely. And soon the unadulterated stench of hell was penetrating our nostrils and we were running, screaming, vomiting inside and outside our masks all the way home. The next time Nana made egg salad, she witnessed a first. We simply wouldn't eat it. None of us. But instead of forcing it down our throats, it was food after all, a blessing not everyone could afford. She eyed us over one by one and seemed to lift the thoughts from our brains, learn our whole illicit story just by observing our quivering lips, watery eyes, suppressed gagging, and fingers pinching our noses closed. Instead, she told us of a family tradition that went back as far as she could remember, that each child was allowed one food they weren't required to eat, a single choice, and without hesitation, we shouted together, "Egg salad!" And we never saw it again. Side note, if Dad ever wondered why egg salad disappeared off the family menu forever, he didn't let on. I suspect he didn't like it to begin with and was glad for the reprieve.
Whoa, Robin, you okay?
Yeah, thanks, Benji, just remembering something.
Looks like a fond memory. Here, grab my hand, get up. I think we need your help with Dear Leader.
You don't smell that?
What?
I sniff.
That. I guess it's faintly funky. Not really.
Listen, we've got bigger problems. Aurora is barking vague orders, but it's leading to lots of aimless shuffling and not much else. I take a few deep breaths, forcing myself to acclimate to the aroma that no one else seems to have a problem with, and sidle up behind her, whispering, "Shelter domes." She swirls around, annoyed. I whisper again. Fun Mars fact. It's comfortable now during the day, but tonight, if Larson has created a proper simulation, it'll go down to -100 degrees. Still annoyed.
And you know that how? Oh, that's right. You're a nerd. So?
So, the shelter domes are the only structures with heat. She turns back to the others.
Okay, I've decided. Shelter domes first. Everybody knows that. Come on, people. Now, on the double. And stick with your teammates. The board is back.
I look up, shielding my eyes from the sun, and yes, the big board has returned. This time as a digital display on the inside of the dome, maybe 15 feet above our heads. Four teams remain. Red, green, yellow, and orange. Our points and likes have been reset to zero. But it appears we've each been given 10 points for our communal effort at staying alive. And Aurora now leads the likes, not surprisingly, by a wide margin. So, Albert, you still think Larson would have saved us?
Albert? Hey, where's Albert?
He's over there. Off about 25 yards, near where we came in, sits Albert, rocking back and forth, knees tucked up against his chest, leaning against the interior wall of the dome. He's got a neighbor, too, Avery Jacobs. It's almost cute how they're rocking in rhythm, except that it's obvious they're shell-shocked. Avery even has a little drool hanging from her lip. Slowly, I approach and sit between them, sniff the air.
Hey, you guys smell that?
Silence. Albert, come on, talk.
A little funky. Not bad. Listen, I'm done. I'm tapping out.
You can't do that.
Shit, yes, I can do that. Stage one was fun. This? Larson is a freaking lunatic. I was wrong. He doesn't care if we die. I think he might even want some of us to die.
I rest my hand on his shoulder and laugh.
No, you were right the first time. He's not going to let us die. I think he knew Aurora had that trick in her back pocket.
How?
It's Larson, I don't know. But he's not an idiot. Or a negligent homicider. I think we're safe. We have to trust that he knows our limits and how far to push. We have to trust each other. The stuff we don't know about each other. Things that will help when we don't expect it.
That sounds like a load of horse shit.
And actually, even as it was coming out of my mouth, I thought it sounded a little fecal, too.
Agreed.
But listen, what makes better TV? Safe and sound or life and death? Fake danger or real danger? Or at least perceived real danger?
He nods.
Good. So are you going to let a little danger keep you from chasing the most amazing adventure in the history of our species?
Yes.
Come on, you really going to just sit here until stage two is over?
He hesitates.
Yes.
Ugh. How about if you come back and I'll set you up with Susie Q over there? She's obviously got it bad for you.
How about I'll come back if you promise to never ever do that? In fact, if you promise to keep her away from me, maybe I'll come back. Far away. I'm serious.
Deal. I extend my hand. He hesitates again, finally shakes on it. Great, Albert. Now help me with Avery.
We get up and dust ourselves off. Albert's still a little shaky, and we reach down for Avery's arms. She jerks them away.
I look into her eyes. She's somewhere really far off. Avery, you in there?
Her hollow stare is my answer. And she's blowing little snot bubbles. I think that's a bad sign.
Aurora's suddenly at my side. What gives?
Avery. She's toast.
Aurora steps back, looks up and around. Hey, Larson, I know you're watching. We've got a casualty. Come and get her.
Nothing. No response.
Didn't think so. Well, one less contestant to worry about when it hits 100 below tonight.
I punch her in the arm.
You don't mean that.
Try me.
I ignore her. Okay, Albert, we'll leave her here for the moment. Construct the medbay dome first and come back and move her in.
For a traditional shelter, you'd build the structure first, then fill it with the utilities and furniture. For the medbay, the process is reversed. First, we assemble the interior, medical scanning equipment, heating unit, water, the connection to the CPU for the membrane, and then we build the structure outside it all. Well, we don't build the outside exactly. It's printed. We just set up the printing unit. It's an incredible sight, watching the unit roll in ever higher circles, painting the air with clear, I don't know, plastic? Gel? It's like watching an igloo being built, but by a robot. On Mars. And not of ice. Okay, it looks nothing like an igloo being built. Anyway, if you look close, you can see just a hint of circuitry running through the material. No superstructure, just the simple parabolic shape, the surface tension holding it together, and the combined outside and inside pressure maintaining the shape and the thickness. The size of a large camping tent, this dome looks just as flimsy. But when I put my weight against it, I'm amazed at its strength, like a soap bubble made out of clear titanium. While I lean against it, I tap through the manual for a little more on this miracle substance and, more important, how we're supposed to enter. It's called PPMM, Powered Polymer Matrix Membrane. Actually, a weave of clear nanothreads, some carrying electric current, some carrying information, all held together with powered van der Waals forces, the same molecular attraction that allows geckos to stick to glass. Larson is calling the PPMM in his manuals a smart surface, allowing things to exit or enter based on instructions to the CPU, down to the molecular level, and intelligently healing itself after something, like a human body, breaches its surface. Benji knocks on the surface.
Okay, so how do we get in? Do I clap twice?
Clap, clap.
Open sesame.
No, wait. Oh, yes, over there at the bottom. Tap that little red light with your foot, but not yet.
He taps it.
And before I can complete yet, the light turns green and I fall through the membrane onto my back.
Thanks.
The teams get faster with each dome. And we manage to complete the 4 sleep shelter domes and 2 backup domes before uncontrollable shivers tell us it's time to quit and get warm. We're exhausted, happy to call it an early night and get a cozy 12 hours of Z's. But it doesn't exactly go that way. I don't know if it's one of Larson's little tricks, or if there's something wonky with the domes, or if it takes time for the thermostats to regulate, but the temperature is swinging wildly, from oppressively hot to ice cold every couple of hours, so our entire night is an awkward group dance of stripping down to our underwear, then bundling up into our spacesuits and blankets, and repeating the process. To make matters worse, the digital privacy screening built into the PPMMs is acting up, too. So more than once, we find ourselves staring at the other teams, and them at us, in the middle of taking our clothes off, or tripping over each other, or relieving ourselves in the outhouse dome.
Psst! Hey, Robin! Where's Mike?
Go to sleep, Benji. He's in the outhouse.
I was just there. He's not there.
So? What are you, his nanny? Go to sleep. On cue, the privacy screening glitches out again, and our domes are perfectly clear.
Oh, wait. I found him.
Good for you. Oh, my God. At the end of the 2 rows of sleep domes, in plain view of all teams, is Mike Horner on a cot in one of the backup domes in his birthday suit. With Marina Della Costa. Benji laughs.
Either the thermostat in there is on its blistering hot phase or they're...
Do they not know we can see them?
I think they're a little preoccupied.
Claire holds her fingers up to her eyes. I shouldn't look. She spreads her fingers just a little. Just enough.
God, look at their likes.
A quick glance at the big board shows Mike and Marina's numbers growing fast. So fast they look like they're going to burn a hole in the PPMM. Maybe they noticed the numbers animating, or more likely felt the eyes of 13 contestants on them, and heard somehow, even through the soundproof domes, our laughter and shouts, because they suddenly look up, scramble for a sheet, and cover themselves, like an ostrich with its head in the sand, hoping no one notices the 2 body-shaped lump on a cot in one of the backup domes. I look over to the med bay, and wouldn't you know, even Avery is giggling. Silver lining. A few minutes later, Mike retreats to our dome.
Stupid privacy screening, damn it! How much did you guys see?
Benji yawns.
What are you talking about? Were you gone?
I yawn too. Yeah, Mike, be quiet. We're trying to sleep.
Mike harumphs. Wait, come on. Really? You didn't see? Did everyone miss that?
Missed what? Go to bed. You're a pain in the ass.
Huh.
So Mike, a little more relaxed now, climbs back into his little cot, clearly relieved. A minute or two later, just before Mike nods off to sleep, Claire whispers into his ear and pokes his rear.
Nice tattoo.